First and foremost, of course, my name is Amanda Barbara. My company is called Pub Slush. We help authors, publishers, different people in the literary world raise funds for their book idea. And I actually have some really great updates that are coming to the site, too, that I'll actually mention at the end that are more targeted more towards the academic world as well. But since we're a small group, if you have questions in the middle of me saying anything, please raise your hand because it's not rude and I want to definitely answer things as they come up. So please feel free to ask any questions. So first and foremost, I just want to kind of go over some basics of like what is crowdfunding. It's an industry and it's an industry on the rise. I'm going to share some stats with you in the slide after this. But just some basic knowledge of what it is crowdfunding is the practice of funding a project or venture by raising small amounts of money from a large number of people. So there's a lot of different types of crowdfunding options. Today we're really going to be focused on reward-based crowdfunding, which essentially means someone gives you a small amount of money and in exchange they get some type of reward or gift or token to thank them for their appreciation and for their kindness. So there's others like donation based. So you just want to legitimately contribute money maybe to a cause. I actually just contributed to one yesterday. A friend of mine's house burnt down and they did a fundraiser to actually help them just eat for the next couple of weeks and get new clothes and things like that. So that was all donation. You know, I'm not expecting a reward or anything like that. And then there's also equity. Equity-based crowdfunding is where you raise money and the investor has owns a piece of your company. And that one's actually still in the works because of the SEC and the Title III and the Jobs Act. So it's actually, there's a lot of platforms, but they're not actually doing business right now. So we're just waiting on that. So some of you might be familiar with sites like Kickstarter, Indiegogo. They provide a platform to raise funds for projects, and they're more of any type of project platform. Kickstarter is really known for more of their gadgets, technology, and a lot of also music and film. Indiegogo was actually started specifically for film when they launched, and then I always laugh because I say they think they got greedy and then just opened it up to everyone. And now with Indiegogo, I think the biggest difference between them and Kickstarter is they approve every project that comes their way. Kickstarter has a lot of different filters that require whether or not something gets accepted. As we talked about, campaign owners pledge rewards in exchange for financial support, and PubSlush, which is my platform, we're optimized more for the author and publishing industry. So some facts about crowdfunding for you guys. The average successful campaign is around $7,000. We've seen, you know, the most we've raised on our platform is $33,000. We actually have a project running right now that thinks they're going to get all the way up to $150,000, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that one. But we really do see an average raise around $7,000. A lot of the campaigners, you know, they just want to cover their book costs, so they're going into it mitigating some financial risk. So a good raise, a nice goal for someone that just wants to pay for an editor, cover designer, just wants to cover those costs anywhere between like 3 to 5, we're seeing those goals, and they're actually achievable. You really have to break down what your goal is, and that's something I work really hard with our authors to actually say, what's reasonable? You know, if you pool, who do you know that's definitely going to be reading? Your readers, your fans, family, friends, your network, maybe colleagues, people that have been really waiting for this book. Will they come, and what's the average price point that they would maybe be willing to give? Maybe they just want the book, which is around, you know, maybe something like $20. So these are just some numbers for you guys. Crowdfunding raised $2.66 billion in 2012, which was up from $1.47 billion. It hit 5.1 at the close of 2013, so you can see that it's on a really nice steady rise as an industry. More than 1 million successful campaigns were run by crowdfunding portals in 2012. Global crowdfunding as a whole rised 81% in 2012. And campaigns that gained about 30% of their funding goal within the first couple days, anywhere between 5 to 7 days, are more likely to hit that end result, that 100% funded.
How many companies represent the $2.66 billion approximately?
How many companies? How many projects?
Yeah.
Well, it's more projects. So they're saying that total across all the platforms out there, I think right now we're approaching like 1,000 different types of platforms out there. There are all different types of projects that make us get to that number. And it's expected to hit close to $81 billion by 2018. So this is an industry that the publishing and academic world needs to get involved in because it's on that hockey stick up is what they say. I actually just got back from a crowdfunding specific conference and then was led by a gentleman, very smart gentleman, who shared all these stats with us, but also just the projections for the future, and it's just crazy. So in 2013, 74 million people worldwide participated in crowdfunding, so that kind of goes to your question, how many, you know, individuals are actually visiting these sites, taking their credit cards out and giving to these projects. And in 2014, the number is expected to hit 362 million people. The term crowdfunding is still super new, so that's why we're trying to get out there, events like this, and really explain what it is and the basics of it. I think people are sometimes intimidated by the word crowdfunding, but when you really break it down, it's really essentially showing support, you know, in a pre-campaign phase, and that's really what our authors are using it for, really to gain pre-orders and understand their readers, which is so crucial because a lot of our authors, you know, if they go straight to Amazon, let's just say, and publish their book there, and they sell 1,000 copies, they have no idea who those readers are and how to get to them for book two or book three. So if you're doing it in more of a pre-order phase, and we let you take all your reader data with you, so the names, emails, and also demographics, huge to know how to better market your book. So obviously we're here at a publishing textbook conference, so crowdfunding for authors and why it's so important. Like we mentioned before, able to raise funds for your publishing costs, so really being able to mitigate that financial risk for you. You're able to market the book before you publish it, collect pre-orders, and then use the supporters that you collect during this time to create even more of a buzz. Shareability is so crucial right now, especially with social media rising every single day and more people spending more amounts of time on social media. I actually just was at another conference and I heard someone from Upstart speak. It's one of the very, very popular news site. And she was saying to us that no one just traffics their site regularly in the morning. No one just goes to Upstart and, you know, explores. They get traffic from Facebook or Twitter because those are the two things that most Americans check every single day, and then their friends share an article that they love, and that's when the traffic gets returned to their site. So think about it the same way for your book. The shareability on, you know, just your purchase on Amazon, very, very low. People are usually not very open to sharing their purchases because they don't want people to know what they're spending their money on. But supporting something like this and giving money to an author to be able to actually publish the book, completely different story. So we see the shareability on these projects extremely high, word of mouth on these projects really, really high, and also the ability to, you know, say you have 1,000 people, no, that's not a big number, let's just say 100 people that support your project, you know, and you have maybe 10 days left. You can go back to those 100 supporters and, you know, build an incentive in. If you get 5 people to support me from you, you know, I'll give you an extra goodie that wasn't in the reward or something along those lines. So it's more and more people knowing about you in this type of spreading. And then, of course, the market analytics we talked about a little bit earlier. So let's just go over, I'm going to just touch on these three platforms today, just kind of give you an overview. Kickstarter and Indiegogo are definitely the most well-known just because they've been around for the longest. Kickstarter is approaching, I think, their 7-year mark, and Indiegogo their 5-year mark. So like we mentioned before, they accept any type of projects. Kickstarter is a fixed funding model, meaning that if you don't make your goal, so if you set your goal for $10,000 and you hit $9,999, you lose it all. You don't get any of the funding. You don't get any interaction with your supporters anymore, so the campaign just ends. And they have a 5% platform fee. And interestingly enough, I learned something new yesterday. They also have a 5% credit card fee because they work with Amazon, and Amazon takes 5%. So total with Kickstarter, you're getting 10%, which is a huge percentage taken out up front.
What's a platform fee?
The platform fee is 5%. Oh, that means how much Kickstarter takes, like for facilitating, you know, having the platform, having you run the campaign, any support that they give you, that's a 5% fee.
If you raise $9,000 and you're asking for 10, you said you get none of it. So that means that all the money, the 9,000 that was pledged, what happens to it?
The credit cards are placed on credit card holds, so no one gets charged. All the money goes back to whoever pledged it. But wow. This is for that model, so that's the fixed model.
Okay.
So Indiegogo has both. You can choose. As a campaigner, you can choose if you want to do a fix or a flex. Big difference here, though, is that if you do choose the flex model and you don't make the goal, they take 9% plus their credit card processing fees. So I think that gets close to about 13 and change if you choose flex and you don't make your goal. And now with us, we just offer flex. It's a little bit different than Indiegogo, so we actually allow our campaigners to set a minimum goal and really their max ideal goal. So in a way, you know, we have authors every day that say to me, I'm going to publish no matter what. This book's coming out. So we require it to be $500. So they can set it at $500, and they can say, but I would ideally love to raise, you know, $6,000. It will cover the cost of what I output and also maybe some marketing dollars. So as long as they make that minimum that they set, which is $500, they get to keep anything after that, and their supporters, you know, are informed during their payment processing that as soon as they hit that minimum goal, they will be charged, and still with 4%. So ours comes out to 7 and change.
With the other companies, are you able to say, you know, let's start with 4,000 and go back and add more money?
start with...
For instance, Kickstarter, whatever, are you able to say, okay, I don't know if I can raise the $10,000 I need. Can I go for $4,000?
You can always exceed. You can always exceed. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can always go over. So that's why I was mentioning earlier, it's super important to say, what do you need? Like, what's the money? What money do you need? And say, okay, I want to cover... This is what my editor is going to cost me. This is what my cover design is going to cost me. Lay out your costs so you're able to actually give a goal to your... to your audience that is reasonable, you know, and I always tell all my authors, lay it out for them. You know, this is an average of what I'm going to need for each of these things to be able to produce my book. But yes, I mean, and they also, there's also stretch goals that you can do as well. So if you say, okay, if I hit $10,000, which is my goal, I can do this. But if I get $20,000, I can do this more. I can write my second book. We have someone right now that the project I was mentioning earlier, Liberty Island, they want to make $50,000, but they have, if they make $100,000, they're going to be able to publish, you know, it's a publishing company, so they want to publish double the amount of books, they want to be able to build an app, so they lay it out for if they make more, so people don't say, wow, they got so much more than they wanted, what are they going to do with this money, that you lay it out for everyone really, really detailed. The more information you can give, the better, of course. So I just wanted to point out some of what makes PubSlash a little bit different than other platforms, because people ask this question a lot. So, of course, we have always been books only, so very focused and niche and community-driven. We actually opened up the platform to literary projects, meaning any type of project in the publishing sector, which has been really exciting for us. So it's a nice hub for the publishing industry. Flex funding we went over. Our analytics make up age, gender, and location of where your supporters are. So it's nice to see, you know, especially going into, I mean, I meet authors every day, and I'm like, oh, who's your target audience? Women. Okay, well, what kind of women? How old are they? Where are they from? What are their interests? What do they read? You know, so this really helps you narrow. Thank you. This really helps you narrow down more of your audience. So when your book hits publication, you know how to better market yourself. Something that really does set us apart, I feel, in the industry is our buy now feature. So after you run your 30-day campaign, let's just say, and you have the money, now you're off publishing, you can actually come back and insert your buy link. So Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, or wherever your book is being sold, you can insert it. So if a reader discovers you in a year from now, they can do a one click and they can purchase your book. And we find that to be really, really great because a lot of readers were checking out campaigns and falling in love with a story or falling in love with the author, and they wanted to know where they could buy the book now. So we built in where this kind of like a one-stop community. So the support button on your page. So the 30 days, you have a support button. So people support you, and they click on PubSlash. And then after your campaign's over, 30 days is over, you have the money, you're on your way to publishing. Once it's published, you can actually come back to PubSlash, go into your back end, and insert your Amazon buy link and activate a buy link. So now instead of that support button that's gone, it now says buy, like a buy now. So it's just more discoverability essentially for you. You know, all the work that you did for that 30-day is not lost because you have, you know, a goal. You're, you know, in our successful campaigns area, and we have readers trafficking that all the time.
I just want to know, some weeks ago I read something about Malcolm
Gladwell,
and that Amazon is sort of like slow dragging his book because
of the Hachette.
Is that because he did this?
No. It's because there's a lot of drama going on right now with we can talk about this for the whole entire session because there's so much to say about it. But essentially what's happening is that Hachette's in a feud with Amazon over their pricing. So because they can't come to a decision, they've eliminated all the pre-order buy links for every book that Hachette publishes right now. So that's what's going on with that. We're actually talking to them with this as a solution in mind. This is something that's very interesting because, you know, you underestimate the power of something where you have a lot of momentum going in a pre-order phase. So this is something that they could definitely consider so they don't lose those sales because those sales are crucial in the beginning, of course. And of course, the most important thing ever is that it's risk-free and contract-free. So you're able to test the waters, and really, we see authors who come on and they get, you know, maybe two or three supporters. They know maybe instead of, you know, pushing this out to publication, there's a lot of things they can do to really gain more readership, gain more following, maybe do a blog tour. We kind of suggest a ton of different things. So how it works. super easy for, and this is really author-driven, this explanation, but all, we allow you to upload a summary of your book, so essentially what you would see on the back cover. And then, of course, you know, the I always say the first chapter, but authors can pick the 10 best pages, anywhere 5 to 10 pages, 20 sometimes if you want. But to give your reader an idea of your writing style, a great way to kind of get them hooked, you know, if they read a first chapter and like, wow, this is really great, I want to support this book and pre-order it, they can do it that way. And then, of course, this page is not only about your – yes?
Just real quick question. What type of format can be uploaded? Is it JPEGs, PDF files,
we do
PNGs?
PDF, doc, and – there's one other one. Yeah, PDF and doc. So two of the most – I actually highly recommend using a doc over a PDF, actually, because – when you upload the, I mean, if you saw the way our is laid out, when you upload the doc, it's read like a story in our system, so it looks beautifully designed in our system. When you upload a doc, it looks like a Word document. Unless you have a children's book or you already have it formatted yourself, if it's a doc, meaning it's a Word document, it just doesn't look as great. But I could definitely send you some examples of what that would look like, to the one versus another, if you'd like.
Well, I use the whole Adobe Suite.
Yeah. I've done it all. Yeah, so if you had a beautifully designed already, yes, then that would be perfect. But we see authors that just upload their Word doc as a PDF, and that just doesn't look right. But think of this page as not only a page to showcase your upcoming book, but also a page to showcase you as the author. So it has your social media links, your website. You have an option to do an author interview, a photo. You can do a video if you'd like. So it's more of an encompassing where the reader gets to not only know your upcoming story, but a little bit more about who you are as an author. And essentially, you want them to be a fan of you. You want this reader to come back and read your second and third book. And this is a way that there's an engage wall, so they can leave you a comment and you can reply. So it's a lot more interactive. And then, of course, you launch the campaign and you can solicit support. So, I mean, my biggest recommendation, and we're going to get to like some tactics later, but this fits right here, is that, you know, when you launch like anything, people want to be a part of something really exciting and a momentum. And we've seen books that have set goals at $2,000 and they get to $10,000. They're 561% funded. And the gentleman was like, I don't know how this happened. I don't even know half these people. It was because he created this own momentum for himself and he exceeded his goals and people wanted to be a part of that excitement. So I always say, make sure you have, you know, anywhere between 3, 5, 10 people that are going to get there first and that aren't intimidated of supporting you at zero. Or an intimidated to be the first one there that are so excited to be a part of this journey with you. Because then when you shoot it out to public or people that might not know you but are potential readers, they'll want to be involved in kind of already this increasing momentum you've created for yourself. And then, of course, you know, once the campaign is done, you receive your funds and you can choose what route you want. So if you want to self-publish, if you'd like to use your, if you did really, really well in your campaign and you want to approach an agent or traditional publisher, we've actually had a few traditional publishers and a few agents approach us to do introductions with authors. Yes, because we had a first-time author raise over $13,000 on a platform, over 250 copies sold in the 30 days for a first-time author. It was pretty good. And she had she was from a small town in Minnesota. So she had an interest, you know, people were interested in learning more about her. So it's definitely a great way to have a starting point and show, you know, prove that you have what it takes, you know, I'm thinking of a word, like market validation. In the description of what I want to talk about today was some successful tips for our crowdfunding campaign. So first and foremost, pre-campaign research is so, so, so important. I always say if you leave here and you want to start your campaign tomorrow, there's a good chance you're going to fail because it takes anywhere between 4 to 6 weeks to really, really prepare. You need to know, you know, do the research on who your audience is. Are you going to have any media going on? Do you have email templates written? Do you have a social media plan? Do you have any point that's going to be talking about you on their blog, et cetera, et cetera? So laying it all out for yourself, just like a book launch, essentially. You know, same thing with a pre-campaign phase. And this phase is even more important because this is when you get people really excited about, you know, gearing up to buy your book. Knowing your audience also. Right now we are working with this one project really closely, Liberty Island. They're writing a publishing company that wants to do conservative fiction. So for them, you know, they have a very kind of targeted niche audience that they want to focus on, people that really like conservative fiction. So they're going to different bloggers, different websites that already have that audience built in and asking for, you know, maybe they can write a guest post, maybe they can be interviewed, because you're not recreating the wheel. This is how you find your reader base, is by going to places that already have the reader base built. A lot of these bloggers and or websites, they are looking for great content. You know, you're giving them the content. So if you get to the right person and they really like your story, it's compelling enough, that's a great place to start. But make sure your outreach is targeted. You know, you don't want to just send out a mass email to 100 editors at random places. You want to make sure it's going into the right hands.
You just woke up a nifty brain cell. Back in the 1800s, how did Sherlock Holmes come into being? But through a serialized version. Is that pretty much online here? As you talk about, this is the environment where readers can find you. 100 years ago, that meant opening the paper and seeing chapter one of Sherlock Holmes, A Study in Scarlet, and then you couldn't wait until the next week to see more.
Yeah, I think serialization is going to be coming back in full force. I really do believe that. I attend anywhere between like 30 to 40 publishing conferences a year, and that's a topic that's definitely being buzzed a lot about right now. It's just how you do it and what platform you do it on is crucial. But I think the biggest thing is that right now there's just so much content out there, whether it's a book or whether it's a blog or a website or your newspaper or a magazine, or it's just reading statuses on Facebook. I know that sounds silly, but that's content. So it's being able to get a reader to find the time in their day to read your book, and maybe it is serialized because in that way they have the time to maybe read 30 pages really quickly, but the 300-page book in front of them scares them and they won't even open the door to it. So there's different ways, and that's why I think it's really great to what we see at PubSlush is that it's really great to have that first chapter that opened the door, because then you have them kind of hooked a little bit and saying, wow, this is really great. I would love to see what else this author has. And then they, you know, then they support you, and then they don't get the book. They get the book in the mail, and it's like a gift they forgot they ordered. So it's a fun way to kind of keep them enticed. Number four is actually really interesting, and the reason I included that in here is based on one of our authors and a quick story I want to share. So we had an author, Matt, on our site, and he had an amazing children's Christmas book. It was beautifully illustrated. The storyline was adorable, and it was just kind of like your 21st century Christmas tale. And he was sitting at zero, and didn't get one person to support his book. And I just couldn't understand it because I think I was the only one to support it because I loved it that much. It was so adorable. I wanted to give it to my nieces. And, you know, we called him up. And after 2 weeks, he finally was like, oh, let's jump on a call. And we said, Matt, like, what's going on? He hadn't told one person about it. He hadn't told one person about his upcoming book because he was scared. What if they hate it? What if they don't want to support me? What if they think I'm asking for charity? He was a minister at a Lutheran church, and he just didn't want to ask anyone for a favor. So we rejuvenated him. We gave him some really great ideas, some ways to incorporate the church, to give back, so people felt like, you know, a reading of the book, you know, to all the children, you know, around Christmas time. Anyone that bought the book, he'd sign it. We came up with all these really whimsical ideas, and within 24 hours, he was at $2,000. And then he ended up closing with, I think, a little close to $4,000, and he got picked up by a Christian publisher. So he is a story. I mean, he didn't make that hundreds of thousands of dollars. He didn't make, you know, he didn't even break $5,000, but he made enough of a dent for people to be interested in him and for his church to fall in love with the story and for them to continue to spread the word. And he's doing really, really well. So, you know, that's, I think, the biggest hurdle. We see two hurdles that I've seen. Two of the biggest is you don't have the money to put the book through, so financing, which crowdfunding helps, but you're also, you know, you don't know about the process, you're intimidated, you don't know what route to take, there's so many options, and there's also a lot of predators out there, you know, who's going to take your money, who's going to have you spend $600 for a press release that is not going to do anything for you or your book, so making sure that you're not timid and you go out there as positively as possible, and making sure you're personal. I always say the shareability, like I mentioned before, is really high. So if you write an email to your 100 supporters and you say, thanks so much for supporting me. I'd love for you to spread my message. I've included one or two sample tweets and also an email that you can send to some of your friends and family. All they have to do is copy and paste it and send it out. The easier you can make things, the better, because people don't have time. So if I don't have time, but you're saying, oh, can you do me a favor and tweet this out? And you give me the tweet, I copy, paste, click, done, it's over. So doing things like that, even if in your own community, you know, you want people to support you, bring, you know, the computer or an iPad and have them hand it right to them all logged in. Little things like that that save time really do help. Updating your supporters is so crucial. Let them know when you hit a milestone. Let them know maybe when your cover design is done. Let them be involved. Give comments, feedback. People love that. And it's exciting for them to be a part of the process, especially since they're helping you get to the end goal. And offer enticing rewards brings me to my next slide. Rewards, think of them in your head as what you would be selling anyway. So your ebook, your print book, a signed copy. We've seen people do where you have a discover by mention in the back of people that helped you bring this book to life, or name a character in the next book. We've seen even more creative where we had a yoga instructor write a yoga book, and one of the rewards is if you lived in the New York area, she'd give you an hour session. We had two sex therapists, husband and wife team, that wrote a book, and at like the $250 mark, you got a 30-minute session with them. You could ask whatever you wanted. And people loved that. So, you know, things that are kind of funny and out of the box, you can't buy on Amazon. You can't buy at a Barnes & Noble store. Things that people will maybe give you that extra $25 because it's fun. And they think, wow, this is great that they're doing this. We've had editors do, you know, I just had an editor do a campaign with us. She made a little over $5,000, and she offered some of her services, you know, technically free when you purchase her book at a higher cost.
Do you all help the people that come on to your company in coming up with these kinds of building, you know, these types of rewards?
So we definitely PubSlash prides ourselves on personalized service, and because we're a niche, we know a lot more about the industry and what rewards work. Same type of deal with also what fits your consumer. So, you know, we had an author, Kim, who had a chick lit book, and she was like, I want to really attack book clubs. I know about 7 in my neighborhood, all women, you know, from my school district. I think they would love this. So she actually decreased her book. You know, she made a little bit less on that package, but she had, you know, anywhere between 15 to 20 readers in a book club, 10 to 20 new readers, and she got like 5 of them, 5 different book clubs, and she set the reward like $300. We do help. We also have additional help called PubSlash Prep. So it's like very small fee. It's like $50 is the lowest one, and the highest one is $250. For $50, we build all your rewards for you, so we take all the work out. And then at $250, we build your whole marketing plan, we build your social media plan, we build your rewards. It's definitely a low fee, but you get a lot for it. I mean, we can't tell you that you're going to be successful, but we can help you have all the tools for success, and that's really important. So I kind of just talked about all of these, but you can read through them. I think the one I didn't talk about is Guerrilla Rewards. So there's also something to be said about having, you know, 50 of your books at like a really low cost. So for the print copy, you know, you do flash, first 50 that buy it, get it for, you know, $15, and then you move it up to 20 or 25 or something like that. And it's kind of, it details everything that comes in with that. So you get like an hour session with our marketing director, an hour session with our author relations coordinator on the phone. I mean, I think that as much as technology is continuing to grow and take over our lives, I know I like phone. I like actually talking to a person. I do emails all day long, and sometimes I'm like, okay, do you want to just jump on a quick call? Because this will be settled in like 5 minutes, and we can just talk it through. Especially in publishing, you work really hard on your book. It's your baby, you know, and you want to make sure you have the best cover possible. You have the right editor. You have the right marketing steps. So, yeah, absolutely. Make sure the cost effective is huge. I mean, imagine like what it's going to cost you to print and ship the book. If it's going to cost you anywhere between like $7 to $10, you don't want to put it out there for $10. You want to make sure that you're making at least, you know, anywhere between 30% to 40% on this, and then, you know, and even then some. And there's also rewards you can do that don't cost you anything. You know, we have a lot of authors that do for $5, you know, I send you a personalized written thank you note. Cost you like $0.49 for the stamp or something. But people love that, and maybe they don't want to buy your book, or maybe they just can't afford it right now, or they just don't have the finances, but they do want to support you. So $5, it helps, it contributes, but that's just $5 in your pocket. So things like that, you want to just make sure you're thinking out of the box. And I mentioned I just want to touch on social media just a little bit, because it's so crucial in book publishing to have some type of social media. First and foremost, use your current networks. A lot of people I know anyway have Facebook, and they use it for personal. So maybe their friends, family, cousins, people they went to high school with, people that they've built over the years, and it's really more of your personal outlet, which is great. Same thing with LinkedIn. You know, you've connected with people that you've met across your path in your life. So those networks shouldn't be discounted. But of course, you have to find the right platform for you, and there's so many different options. I mean, there's 4 right here, and this is just a glance at it. You know, there's Pinterest, and you have your own blog and all these other things. And LinkedIn, of course, I should probably add that and get out Tumblr. So I think you just need to find what's right for you. I think there's a lot of pressure on being on everything. And if you can't be on everything like every day and do it, keep up with it, then you might as well just pick one or two that you're really going to be on and active. And I think definitely for the author world, I mean, Twitter is an amazing resource. That's how I find a lot of our authors that we work with. We search different hashtags, you know, and for an author, if you're writing, you know, fiction or romance, or I even searched book club hashtag the other day and I found like 40 new book clubs that we're going to start working with. So you can use Twitter to your advantage because there's just a wealth of people that are out there. But see, there's also something called Hootsuite where you can actually schedule your tweets for the whole day. So if you go, if you have to go to work from 9 to 5 and you can't be active on your Twitter, you can schedule things throughout the day. Maybe a question, things that are interactive, maybe a great article about something in your genre or something that you think your readers would want to know about. Maybe you want to do a quote from your upcoming book and then tag it to like where your excerpt is, maybe on PubSlush, a lot of different things. But like I said, you know, don't have it and let it sit there and don't tweet for 5 days because then no one's going to want to follow you and then you're not going to continue to grow. But also, there's a lot of pressure on being active on it. So maybe dedicate, you know, a half an hour in the beginning of your day when you're having your coffee and eating your breakfast to exploring it, and maybe a half an hour at the end of the day. And maybe find some targeted people that you want to ask questions to or talk to. Favoriting is huge. If you favorite a ton of different things that interest you, people will start seeing your name. There's a lot of different tactics. I always say be specific, but stay consistent. So if you're going to use Facebook for personal, then keep it, you know, that's fine. Put pictures of your children or your dog or you and your wife on vacation. But that's not what, if Twitter's more of your professional outlet where you want to be your author, writer, professor, then you keep that very professional. You don't put your dog sleeping in your bed. You keep it, you put more like maybe you're at a writer's conference and you post that, or you're at an event at your school or a workshop in your community. So keep it consistent and professional in the outlets you want to target. Target your audience and make sure you're building a brand, and that brand is consistent, like I said before, with what image you want to be putting out there. And I know this is, I don't know, I added this slide because we always go back to this word community and how important it is to not only build your own community, but use other platforms that have community. So author communities are super supportive. I have attended conferences where people leave and they all want to buy each other's book just because they want to support them. And then they buy each other's book and then they tell other friends if they loved the book. So finding an outlet that really fits you, whether it's, you know, you get together once a month in like a book club fashion or whether it's a writer's conference. I mean, I've only been here for a few hours and I already feel like you guys are your own little mini family. And that's great. And that's exactly what you're looking for. I always say I have my conference family because I go to the same conferences with the same industry people. My best friend actually works at Kobo through my professional life, you know, because we're at the same conferences together. So find people that really, you know, and she supports me. Every news update, she blasts it out to all the Kobo writers and vice versa. Any Kobo thing, we push out to PubSlush. It's free, costs me nothing, but I love to support her. So same thing, find writer friends that, you know, maybe are in the same genre. That's even, I work with a few romance, female romance writers, and they actually formed like a mini alliance. They have 10 of them, and they all write their own, but they share readers, and that's so important because you're not in competition with anyone in your genre. People, if they love romance, they're gonna try and read every romance book they can. They just need the recommendation. So that's huge, and you can do it right in your own backyard in your hometown, or you can have a conference that you go to every year. But definitely, there's always more to learn, and always more to grow, and more people to meet. I know I'm talking to all professionals, and you must all have a business card, but have a business card. I go to conferences and I always want to follow up with someone. They're like, oh, I don't have a card. You don't have a card? I need your card. I can't talk to you if you don't have a card. Have a card. Have it with all the most important information on it, whether it's your website, your Twitter, your Facebook, your email. I've gotten hundreds of cards without emails on them and I don't know how to talk to them then. Your phone number is not really that important because no one really picks up the phone and is going to randomly call you. And if they do, that's weird. But I think it's definitely important to remember, you know, where do you want people to go after they meet you? And also, it's never too early to start formulating an email list for yourself as an author. I go at every event. I'll do it with you guys after. I'll give you all my cards. I'll collect all of yours. And I want to communicate with you. You know, I'll send you my newsletter, you know, and I'll answer your questions. But same thing, you know, put me on your newsletter list. Let me know what's going on with you. You know, send me an email. Say, can I add you to my newsletter? I'd love for you to hear what's going on with my book. Things like that, those contacts are invaluable because when your book does come out, you'll have a list. Quick, easy steps. I think I must have said all these already. I said the first one, have 5 or 10 authors, I mean, some readers that are going to jumpstart your campaign. No one wants to support anything at zero. I know I don't. So, you know, even if it's your husband or your wife or something, you know, get them there first because that kind of momentum that's building is going to help you with the people that don't know you and don't know all the passion you put into your book. Link it. Add your campaign or your book to everything. Put it at the bottom of your email signature. Put it on your website. Put it on your LinkedIn. Put it on your Twitter little description on your Facebook, wherever you can put it, wherever there's anything that you frequent, put it there, because how many times I click and check it out. Business card, we just talked about. Have a business card, please, everyone. And everyone loves a good promo deal. Offer a special promo to bloggers who talk about your campaign. So we feature a lot of authors on PubSlush's blog, on blog.pubslush.com. And we do a lot of segments. We do Women on Wednesday. We do Story Behind the Story, which is all really great writers and really compelling stories of why they wrote their book. That's a really great segment. We have Project Blogger. But we always say to our authors, we always say, do you want to run a giveaway at the end of your post? So give away an ebook copy of your book. It costs you nothing, but that's one new reader, and you have multiple people that are entering. And if they read an excerpt of your book, maybe they'll go and buy it if they didn't win. So things that don't cost you anything, but get your book in the hand of people. I actually just came up with this like new tip of advice. I have to add it to this, but if you do go to conferences often, and you carry a copy of your book or the book you're releasing soon, don't give it away. Show people and get their opinion. I was just talking to a woman in the other room about this. You know, what do they think of your cover? What do they think of your layout? Huh? If your pages are stark white, you know, that's a true sign of self-published. So, like, what are the get people's opinions, you know, and get feedback. Not necessarily from your husband, but from a reader or from someone at a conference who, you know, you have to have someone that's going to give you the brutal, honest truth of what they think of your book, because then you have time to make those changes to make sure it's the best it possibly can be, the highest quality. But I go to a lot of conferences, and authors are constantly giving me their book. And like, oh, here's a free copy of my book. And I get like 30 books at the end of a conference, and I don't have time to read 30 books. I don't apparently have time to read anything. So I would love them to say, here's an excerpt of my book, or here's my summary, and here's my website, check it out. And then email me and remind me to check it out, because then I'll click and do it. But giving out free copies of your book, it just costs you money, and then people either throw it away or they sit on their shelf. You want readers, so you'd rather find a reader that's going to read it and give you a review at the end. Or I would rather say to you, oh, this is your book. Let me give you some comments on, like, the front, the back, the ISPN, the summary. I saw a woman the other day. She came to my booth at BEA, and she had her book, and she was so proud of it. And I said to her, I was like, this is really great. I'm super proud. I've met her before. I met her at 3 other conferences, and she finally had her book. And I said, she goes, I want the brutal, honest truth from you. What do you think? And I was like, if you want me to be brutally honest, I'm going to do it. She said, yeah. I'm like, this is very self-published. She's like, what do you mean? And I pointed out, like, 6 different things that she didn't notice. You know, and then I was like, and she already has 1,000 copies of her book printed. So there's things like that that you can just, you know, when you go to conferences, reach out to people that have experience, but also fellow readers and writers, people that have done it before. And don't be nervous to ask for advice. We want to help you and make the best book possible. Oh, and then this is just some more information. If you guys want more information about crowdfunding, we have an option to, if you sign up for an account on PubSlush with the promo code TAA, we'll send you a 30-page guide of not only crowdfunding, but marketing tips, social media tips, pre-campaign tips, you name it. The guide's just filled. 30 pages. It's a quick read, but it's filled with great stuff that you might not know. It's free, obviously. And that's like some of our social media if you guys are interested. And then you can email us generally at hello@pubslush.com, but then I can be reached to at Amanda@pubslush.com. But does anyone have any other questions?
We have.
Okay.
Tell us how you got started in this, Amanda.
My mom and I started it 2.5 years ago. The inspiration is, and actually I've been defending PubSlush and the name for the last week or so, because, you know, people think of the slush pile as a negative thing. And I look at the slush pile as a place where a lot of best-selling authors sat for weeks, months, years. J.K. Rowling, Catherine Stockett, Stephen King, the list can go on and on of amazing, Dr. Seuss, books of our time that have been turned into classics that got rejected over and over and over again because someone in a room decided they weren't good enough. And I think there's a lot of elements of traditional publishing that are outdated, and I think a slush pile, unsolicited manuscript sitting in a room is a waste of paper. Big tree lover, and also a waste of a great author's talent. And now the self-publishing doors have opened up, which is amazing. So they have a lot, authors have a lot more options. But if you do want that traditional path, like a lot of authors do at some point, maybe they don't, but some do, you need to make sure that you have, you know, a reader base already. You know, a lot of traditional publishers, they want you to have fans, they want you to sell, you know, more than 100 copies. So the PubSlush was inspired by, you know, some really great best-selling authors that got rejected. The platform has evolved so greatly since we started. And I actually wanted to tell you guys about a new feature rolling out in August, because this might be something that interests everyone. I'm super excited to talk about it. We're actually rolling out where if you have funding, so you don't need funding, you have plenty of money. Every time someone tells me they don't need funding, I laugh. And I said, if you had an extra $10,000, you wouldn't use it? And they always laugh, and they're like, yeah, I'll take an extra $10,000. But we're going to open it where it's actually just for strictly pre-orders. So there won't be any dollar amount shown to your reader. It'll just be number of early readers. So it'll be an option for people that maybe don't need funding to publish, but they still want to take advantage of our community and of our reader analytics, of our market analytics, and of just a lot of, you know, the personalized service, all these other things that we do offer that they love, but they might just want to do it strictly for pre-order. So that's going to be opening up in a month.
My other question was, what's your background and your mom's background that even got you all interested in this to be able to really put your heart, body, and soul into a project like this?
My background was in sales and marketing. I'm pretty young. I just turned 26 last week. I'm used to saying 25. I'm 26. So, I mean, I had a lot of experience, not in publishing, but in sales and marketing. My mom has an education, philanthropy, sales background. We came into this. We had a really great advisory board that were all based on people in publishing. We had an idea, and we ran with it. And as we evolve, we evolve based on the needs of the industry. You know, this new pre-order function that's going to be live in August came from 3 different meetings with traditional publishers that can't wait to be a part of PubSlush, but they want something a little bit different for the way they operate, which is fine. Our self-publishers, they love us. I mean, I guess to go back to your question, I guess what makes me passionate, I'm making people's dreams come true. And I know that sounds crazy, but I mean, I have an author, Angela Miller, who like wrote me the most, I mean, I was hysterically crying. I changed her life. She's a published author now. She's writing her second book, and she didn't think it was possible before she met us. We also had another author, Tracy, was based in Texas. She lost her child about 3 months. The child just died, heart stopped. Really tragic story. And she wrote a children's book for other children that have lost a brother or sister, and how to explain to them what heaven is as a child. Where did my baby sister go? You know, so she wrote this book for her kids, her 2 older kids that had lost a sibling. And she wrote it, and she put it in her drawer, and she never published it. And she just let it sit there because she didn't know what to do. And then a friend of hers told her about PubSlush. She took it out of the drawer. She put it on. She raised close to $10,000. She published the book, and we made a difference. And now she has this great book that not only is helpful for her kids, but other kids that grieve. So I think that's really driving for my team. I'm also very blessed because I have the most amazing team on the planet. I think as an author, you have to have a really strong team. You know, you go in it, you're an author, you're one person, so you go in it on your own. And you don't have to go in it on your own. You know, even though you're self-publishing, find an amazing editor or find a team like PubSlush or find a great, you know, publicist. I mean, I don't even want to suggest that just yet unless you're like really doing huge things with your book, but find someone else that's just going to guide you through. Even your editor won't mind saying, oh, don't use them for a cover design, or don't use them for, you know, your ISBN. I mean, you should all use Bowker, but you know, you have to not think of it as going in it alone, because it can be really scary and intimidating. I do a lot of these things for free. I do a lot of teleseminars, Google Hangouts. I think it's exciting to, at the end, you know, get a ton of people that are like, you taught me so much that I didn't even think about before, and that's exciting. So it's definitely a passion project for sure, and I mean it's also something where, I mean, you guys get up and write, and you love to. I'm not a writer. I'm also not really a publisher. I don't really know what exactly I am, but I love my job. I do. I love my job. I love going to work every day. So that's good.
Quick question. I know you said if you really want to raise $10,000, but you can't, you lower it, and then if you exceed it, that's great. But let's say you want $10,000 and you set your goal at $2,000 and you don't hit it. What are the stipulations? Are you able to come back and run a different campaign? Is there a time limit or anything like that?
So I encourage everyone to do anywhere between, we say 45 is the max day. I think 30 days is the best campaign to do. If you said to me, I did my minimum at $2,000 because I can publish with that, but I'd love to run a second campaign, I would say you give yourself 6 to 8 months. I wouldn't run a back-to-back because you're just going to fail again. You'll learn so much from the first experience that you can carry over to the second experience, but it takes planning. And then you also have to have a goal. I mean, we had a woman that ran a campaign just for her audiobook. she raised a lot of money, and I don't know, all these people had already bought her book, but they wanted the audio version. That's why she did it. So you have to know who your audience is, and you can't just go out there saying, I want to raise $10,000, and I don't have one person I'm going to ask to help me with this. You have to have, you know, I always say, can you list at least 30 people, and will those 30 people help you get another 30 people, and vice versa, I mean, and continue it. Angela, who I spoke about before, she got $13,000, and then when she exported her reader data, she realized that 70% of her supporters were strangers that she didn't recognize their names. 70%. That was a record for us at PubSlush, and that was amazing. And I said, well, you know, I was like, well, of course, you know, we were blasting her out everywhere. Her story was really compelling, and we fell in love with her as a person. So I believed in her. I supported her book as well. I wanted it. But what were the other reasons? You know, what else contributed? And so when we sat down, we had our follow-up call with her. She said, I think the biggest contributor was that the 30% of the names that I did know, they were so much in my corner that they shared it constantly. They were out there helping me. And if you can have, you know, anywhere between 10 to 15 people that are like, wow, this book is great, and I want everyone I know to read it, and they're not just telling someone about it once, but, you know, four or five times, people want other, I mean, how do you find your next read? Usually someone recommends it to you, right? I mean, I have a stack of books that my mom's best friend gives me, and I read whatever she tells me to, actually, because I don't have time to find this. She goes to the Costco and buys all the books, and then she reads them, and she throws away the one she hates, and she gives me the one she loves. But it's word of mouth. So if someone's saying that you're going to love this book, you're going to read it, or you're going to try and read it if you have the time.
Okay, I know that.
Does that answer your question? Sorry.
Yes, yes, it does. One other quick question. I know you're working with the self-pub industry, obviously. Do you have any contacts, or do you have any type of database for copy editors, mm-hmm. things like that? Because I'm a little bit different because I do all the desktop publishing, but a lot of people don't have a good editor, somebody who do cover design. I think that's
so we try and connect as much as we possibly can. We really work off our partners. So right now in the PubSlush community as a whole, like, so if you went to PubSlush.com/community, it's all of our publisher partners and all of our industry partners, meaning like we work with Lulu, we work with a company called Wise Inc. We work with Kobo Writing Life. We work with Ingram Spark. We work with Merrimack Media, which is another publisher. We work with Iguana Books. We work with all different types of self-publishers. So they're the first ones we recommend because we have contacts there. We legitimately introduce people to other people. Yeah, the authors that come back, they give us positive or negative feedback. So we're not going to continue to recommend someone. But we start with our partners first because they're constantly bringing us authors as well.
I have two questions for you, Amanda. The first one is for marketing going forward. So you've raised the money for your book campaign, you've produced your book, and now you have it, and now what? How do you get it sold to other people that haven't promoted or haven't contributed to the funding?
So many ways. We could talk for hours. We'll definitely talk after this.
Does PubSlush help?
I mean, we come up with the ideas. We don't do them for you. But, I mean, there's a lot of different ways. It's a lot of work. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight. I actually just heard Hugh Howey speak recently, and he said that marketing is for life. So you market your book, even if you come out with your third or your fourth or your fifth, you're still marketing those first and second and third.
Do you have partners that help the
authors
do that?
Yeah, so we have, like, publicity partners, marketing partners. But you also want to just be careful. You know, you want to make sure that they're results-driven. Like, PubSlush is results-driven. So I want to make sure that – you want to make sure that whoever you're working with, if you're going to pay them, you know, X amount of dollars per month, what results are they going to get you? And there's a lot of things that you can do on your own. You just need the ideas, but that's why you can maybe go to them for, like, a consultation and get some ideas and maybe execute them yourself. But like I said before, sending out a press release, like a mass one that costs you $600, if your book isn't press-worthy, it's not going to get covered. You wasted $600, and you could have put that $600 to going to a conference and or learning more to become a better writer, or you could have gone to something fun in your local community, gone to a book festival, things like that. So just make sure you're using those dollars in the right way. But, yeah, we can definitely talk after this. I mean, there's a lot of ideas.
But you all have partners that will help
yep.
people. Okay, my next question. At the beginning of the session, you said something about textbook authors, and I don't think we ever got to that.
Well, we haven't really, like, delved into the academic world. It's a little bit harder because a lot of them are looking for grants. A lot of them, you know, they take years and years to do. But when we're trying to kind of find our way into it in a way that best suits it, and we're thinking more of like going to the academic universities and having them create pages and having their teachers that are looking to raise funds or looking to actually maybe pool. Maybe they're going in with a few different. Maybe I just met a woman that wrote a calculus book. You know, she could have maybe gone to the teachers that might have wanted to use her book when it was published and see if they would maybe contribute or spread the word about it. There's a lot of different things, but we're still trying to figure it out because I feel like the academic and textbook world are evolving really quickly as well. So I'll get back to you on that as I continue to learn more about how it all works and how it can best fit us. But, I mean, we're open to everything, and I think it's exciting to see the professional academic world kind of trying these new things to get their books out there and get a new audience, and that's really exciting. And, you know, you're not 100% going to get a grant to write this book, so what other options are there out there for you? And if you have the backing of your university, maybe it's just the, you know, a department or students or things like that, I mean, that can go a long way. You can get small little $20, you know, increments could add up to be something really great. All right, well, thank you all so much for coming.